Welcome to the Forging Honor podcast. I'm Jonathan George.
And I'm Benjamin Jones. Here at Forging Honor, we explore what it means to live as Christian men. Along the way, we'll be doing challenges, building habits and character through action.
All right. It is challenge wrap-up time, the last episode of this season. As a reminder, challenges last for 6 weeks. That's a total of 42 days. They are simple daily tasks to grow us as Christian men. And this challenge that we are wrapping up today that we will be talking about was to read or write something for at least 15 minutes every day. Banjo, how did you do?
I did okay. I'm sad coming to the end of this challenge. I've really enjoyed this one. I think it's been really helpful for me. I've heard from other folks that they've gotten a lot out of it too. So it's been a positive experience. Love hearing that. Love it when folks tell us how things are going. So give us a mention, shout us out. Happy to hear feedback, and especially as we get ready for our next episode, our next series, and whatnot. So. But in any event, yeah, I did about four out of seven this week. Just kind of got out of rhythm in a couple of different things. Still struggling to find a rhythm with some of it. Still doing good. And again, I think I said this last time, but still trying to find a way to get back into writing in the midst of the school year. That's what I really miss right now. I did finish up kind of the race and the training block. Maybe we can talk about that later, but. The time is going to free up a little bit now that I'm not preparing for a half marathon. So, hoping that I can make use of that time. How about you? How did you finish up?
Terribly. 2 out of 7. It was
might be a
bad
new
last
low.
Week for me. I did not finish strong like I had anticipated and planned. Don't really even have good excuses for it. I had the time. I just didn't do it. And yeah, I wonder how much of that is, going into this week, I kind of just told myself it's the last week, kind of just, it didn't treat it with the same vigor that I did the first several weeks. Those first couple of weeks I was going really strong, then started to fall off in the middle. And then I did not recuperate and recover as I should have. So a little disappointed with myself there, actually more than a little, very disappointed with myself there. But if I'm looking at the positives here, what I learned was I need to be reading every day, because those weeks where I was solid, where I was on top of it, were some of the best weeks I've had in a long time. I think my brain was just more active in a good way, not in a rushed way, but in a more contemplative way, going back to what Dave Raymond talked about when we interviewed him. So I don't know if you have thoughts about that or what your experience was like. It sounds like you were kind of in the middle for your last week. How do you feel about that?
I think you're right. It's like, as you talk about that, it kind of reminds me like in golf, you and I are both extreme. Well, I'll speak for myself, extremely amateur golfers.
Likewise.
Yeah. I enjoy a driving range. But the thing that always happens to me is, I press. I try too hard with my driver. If anyone knows how a driver works and, has some quick tips, send them away, because it would greatly improve my game. But I press, I try too hard, and invariably the ball shanks way right. I can never fix that one. But sometimes it feels like that with these intellectual pursuits, I think that you and I kind of naturally love, like the more that we think about them and talk about them out loud, I think we sometimes psych ourselves out of like, I want to read every day. Oh, but now I'm thinking about it. So, it becomes a chore when it's not supposed to be. So I wonder how much of it is that, but I think we also should probably just acknowledge, especially for folks at home listening along, like, I think this is a hard challenge. Like I think there's a reason that it has been difficult for both of us. I think there's a reason that we have to be like, this is what we want to do every day. I think more than most challenges, this one's hard because you can't maybe see the progress in the same way that you can with like a physical challenge. You don't feel it in the same way. It's not quite as satisfying. It's not like waking up at 5 a.m. every day and you can at least be like, well, I'm up, and I can like feel endorphins or whatever. Or it's not like going and working in the gym because you're not, you can't see visual gains.
Right.
You can maybe see like a book being finished, but that takes so much time. You know, I'm reading through Les Mis right now and I'm on like page 300 and it feels like I'm in the middle of a desert, an enjoyable desert, filled with, you know, very sad Frenchmen, but, you know, that's where I'm at and I'm going to be there for quite some time. I don't know. Does that resonate with your experience?
Definitely. I think the additional pressure I put on myself definitely did not help, partially because, like you're saying, pursuing it for the goal of checking a box is not satisfying in and of itself.
Right.
You need to pursue it because you love it. And in that pursuit, if you do it simply because you love it, you will see those gains eventually. You will see the intellectual pursuit pay off in the long run. But it does take a lot of time. And I think that's why every single one of our guests would harp on kind of the note of curiosity, you know, pulling the thread and pursuing these things because you're interested in them, because that's the only way you stick in it. And that's something every single one of them recognized, was just the joy of learning something you want to learn about. And so you have to put things in front of yourself that you're excited to learn about. And when you put something in front of yourself that you're saying, I'm going to do this because I think the world is telling me I should do it, or I want to check this box, you won't maintain that curiosity in the way that you should.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's an earnestness that comes with that, that I think is really, it's hard to pursue in modern life because we're such an irony based culture. You know, we're such a mockery based culture. And I include, you know, I'm not saying that from any position of like, you know, I'm not clean. I am a person who's full of sarcasm and mockery, and I, you know, enjoy it quite a bit more than I should. But I've referenced this piece before, but if people haven't read it, yeah, you got to go read David Foster Wallace, E Unibus Plurum. I think I've got that right. Or E Plurum Unibus. One of those two.
It's the first.
Well,
and you've mentioned it before.
Yeah. It's just a great piece. Where he talks about irony and what it's like to live in a television based culture and what that does to us. And I think all the things he talks about there are multiplied by the internet. And one of them is just there's no earnestness. There's no desire to kind of put yourself out there. There's always this need to kind of like put a screen, literally and metaphorically sometimes, between you and who you really are. And I think when it comes to education, it's hard for people to enter a situation and say, I don't know anything about it. I don't have an answer for that. I want to learn more. I think that humility is really hard to find.
That absolutely makes sense. And it's funny, you mentioned the screens. I was really happy to do this challenge immediately following our tech challenge. Because since then, after doing the tech challenge, you know, I implemented some pretty strict guidelines around my technology for myself. And that's been an ongoing conversation between me and my wife in a really good way. You know, I haven't stuck with the dumb phone 100%, but it's, you know, I've been doing the SIM swapping. But one other outcome of that was we set aside, we made some rules about like when we're watching TV. So we've been enjoying Clarkson's Farm on Amazon Prime, and we set a rule, we're only ever going to watch one episode, and we really only sit down to do it once a week. So we're taking our time through this. And then going into the reading and writing challenge, I realized, oh, if I'm not watching TV every night, I've got more time for this. Because the habit had been, you know, let's pull up another episode of Psych or another episode of whatever we're enjoying at the time.
Great show, Psych, by the way. Excellent. Yes. Excellent.
Great
material.
Stuff. But if you're doing that every night, you know, as Dr. Grant pointed out, if your default is to sit and just Netflix or even worse, binge something, then you'll always think that you're busy and you don't have time for these pursuits. So I think the back-to-back, the tech challenge and the reading challenge really helped me kind of put into focus, oh, I do have time for these things, and when I'm not doing them, it's simply because I'm either too lazy or I'm not loving it for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah. And that reminds me of something, again, another book we've referenced too many times, but Amusing Ourselves to Death, Neil Postman talks about, you know, he says, I got no problem with like The Simpsons. What I have a problem with is like Sesame Street. And the reason he says that is Simpsons doesn't pretend to be educational. It's only entertainment. And because it's so clear in that way, Right. It doesn't trick you into saying, well, I'm learning something, when really you're just being entertained, you're being amused. And I think about that for myself, where I know I have that tendency to pick things that I think I'm learning from this thing.
Right.
But really I'm just being entertained. And I'm trying to find the balance between that.
What do you think about, I'm calling it now, the epidemic of Netflix documentaries? There's so many of them.
Well, that's interesting.
And I say it because a lot of people I know at work will be like, no, I don't really read, but I watch documentaries. And that's their...
Oh, that's interesting.
I've had this conversation multiple times now with some coworkers and well, not just coworkers, but the people I interact with. And they'll say, I'm not much of a reader, but you know, all these great documentaries. And what I've realized is so many of these, they're simply, they are that entertainment.
Right.
They might be somewhat informational, but you could have gotten that same information reading an excellent book on the subject and probably learned more.
Well, yeah. And the thing that's sneaky about documentaries that's different from a book is a documentary presents itself as objective. It presents itself as you're looking at footage, and so whatever you see must be the truth. And it's a real problem for documentarians because, you know, most people in the documentary industry will kind of acknowledge, like, when you're making a documentary, you're just by the way that you point a camera at something, you're putting an opinion on it, right? Or you're either by what you have in the lens or what you put in or what you take out, what you point a camera at or what you avoid, is its own kind of editorial. And so if you're not aware of those things, you really think that you're getting an objective picture. You really think that you're seeing everything that's there because you're seeing everything that's on the screen, but you're not seeing everything that isn't on the screen. And that's not to say that doesn't happen with books, but the problem with documentaries is we have this natural bias that we think that they're totally objective. Whereas with a book, we have to kind of test that a little bit more. We don't come to a book necessarily assuming that it's true in the same way the documentary is. And so you can really trick yourself into thinking that you know everything on a subject. And you can also really mistake like something that is factual for something that is like drama based. So like, for example,
right, you know, right.
Band of Brothers is a great, it's an amazing miniseries. It's a great show. Not necessarily a great documentary. You know, it's not exactly a place where you should like go to get information. But it is a great place to go if you want to like kind of get the kind of the visceral experience of what it's like to watch that play out. Does that make sense?
Right.
You know, like, is that
totally makes sense?
Is that part of the conversation that folks have? I don't know.
I think maybe so. You know, there are,
because I'm a film nerd. That's like viewers. A film nerd conversation.
Absolutely, and I'm not as well versed, say, in the. Even the basics of film. But what you're saying totally rings true. And I think we can do it to some extent with books. You know, the type of books that Definitely. We consume will do that. You know, especially the popular science books of today are a little more, well, here's the truth, here's the stats.
Kind of TED Talk books.
Yeah, exactly. And I love some of those books. I've mentioned Cal Newport multiple times, and that's the type of book he writes. And I do think that there's a time and place for that. But you know, I go back to, well, what did our guests say? Dr. Grant talked about we should read what those before us read, not just what they wrote.
That was a good
right?
point.
He got interested in the founding fathers, and he read their stuff, and then realized, well, what were they reading? And you could do that perhaps with film or with documentaries, and say, who is this director influenced by?
Yeah,
you know, who have they watched? And I could see there being some application. In that pursuit, anyway,
that's the way that I kind of taught myself. Like that was my own film school for myself, was just going through a list of directors that I liked and said, okay, well, you know, Christopher Nolan liked this director. Where did he get that influence? You know, these movies that I enjoy, they learned dialogue from this, and there's, you can find so many lists out there of that where you basically can take yourself to film school. Guys like Quentin Tarantino, that's what they did. I mean, Quentin Tarantino worked at a movie rental place, like a Blockbuster type situation. Our younger listeners might not know what that is, but it's an invention before Netflix, and we'll tell you when you're older.
It was amazing back in the day.
Yeah. But in any event, he worked at a video store, and that was where he taught himself film. Like, he just watched all of these movies, and then when he went to make his own movies, he just had this encyclopedic knowledge that he could pull from. So you can do it with film. And on a similar note, you know, I appreciated Beck Oderson's point about, you know, don't go read about famous people, go read those famous people, you know, so don't go read about Augustine, you know, go read Augustine. But also, you know, don't just read what Augustine is saying about the Bible, read the Bible, you know, that kind of like soaking yourself in those original texts, kind of like what you're saying. I thought that was really helpful, harder to do and kind of more intimidating, don't you think?
It can be, especially because, you know, some of these heavyweights have had so much written about them.
Right.
Like the number of books written about Calvin or Augustine it's ridiculously high. And so you get the impression that whatever they wrote is somehow too complicated for you to understand. But what you have to realize is everybody writing about these people, it's just their ideas about that person. So it's not that Calvin himself is actually all that difficult to understand. He actually writes in a wonderful manner.
Super readable for the most part.
But I could totally understand if you're setting out on a pursuit, I don't know, you could pick a topic and you just say, wow, there's all this stuff written about that topic. You think it's a vast topic when in reality, it might be a little bit more condensed than you realize. And then there's just all this extra thought to it, which is a fun pursuit. And I think that there's a wonderful place for that. I don't know what that is though.
When you're operating on your own speed, JJ, when you're kind of like under your own wind, under your full mm-hmm. sail, what are the things that you're like, oh, I have 20 minutes. I would like to read this. Like, I'm going to go learn about this topic. Not necessarily what you feel like, I wish I spent time on this. Like, I want to go, but like, where really does your time go?
Where really does my time go? All over the place. I think I'm pretty evenly split between fiction and then learning about great men, and especially great men and the habits that they had. So I'm very driven, hence this podcast, by the habits that make up my day. I think about that a lot. I think because I look at the great men of that came before us, and so often, it wasn't necessarily that they had this insane morning routine or something, but they just had these regular habits that they pursued, whether it was reading, writing. You know, you look at some of the other great men of history, and you know, they might have gone for walks every day, or they were getting outside, they had a regular routine of exercise, whatever it was. There was something about each and every one of their lives and about each and every one of their days that they set apart and made their own. And I really respect that. So those are the kinds of things I like to learn about. But then, like I said, kind of an even split with fiction. I still just love fiction. You know, I know a lot of, I feel like a lot of guys our age kind of don't take the time for fiction, but I think we can really learn a lot from it if we decide to sit and think about it. And I know that you being the English major, you're like, yes, 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 go, Jonathan, getting your track in the right path there. You know, it's a point that can't be overstated, I think.
Oh, I agree. It's funny though. I have a really hard time actually. If I you know, take a pretty solid look in the mirror, I have a hard time because my day job is so fiction based. You know, I spend so much time kind of like dissecting fiction and reading it to the kids and trying to explain it, that often when I come home, I have a really hard time sitting with a work of fiction because I can't turn off that part of my brain. I can't turn off that. It's really like work at that point. And so I also enjoy, I really love like biographies. I think biographies of interesting people I find fascinating. Like, you know, you could see behind me with cameras on. I got Steve Jobs is up there, which is a great read. I got this one on Napoleon that was really fascinating. David McCullough's biographies are always just so well written. His one on Teddy Roosevelt was super, super helpful. On my desk right now, I've got one on Beethoven that I haven't finished and one on Samuel Beckett that I think is really interesting. I was like philosophy. I like reading philosophy.
Right.
I don't have the I don't have the mind of a philosopher, but I'm always interested by those ideas. JJ, you're laughing. Right. You're laughing at that, but you know, I had philosophy friends in college at Covenant, and they were, right. There's a way that they think about the world. And this is what I think is really interesting. And I had this moment in college. I don't know if you had a moment like this, but I my initial plan in going to Covenant was I wanted to be a lawyer. I wanted to go get my English degree.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I wanted to be a lawyer, and I actually wanted to go into politics. And I had grandiose plans to be a politician. So I took a poli-sci course I took a comparative politics my freshman year. It was a lot mm-hmm. of fun. I really liked it. Who was the professor? Oh, I'm just gonna escape me. But it was a really good course, really hard. But I enjoyed it. Except after I started another American government class. And with a bunch of other poli-sci interested students, and I was an English major, I declared English major early, but I was still planning on kind of going through and taking these extra classes. And I just realized, like after like the first week or two of my second poli-sci course, I was like, I'm not asking the same questions that these poli-sci majors are. I'm not interested in the same things. I don't have the same curiosity about the world that they do. I'm interested in different things. I found the same thing when I went to the philosophy courses. I loved philosophy. Those were some of my favorite classes I took at Covenant. Shout out Dr. Davis and Dr. Wingard and the folks over at the philosophy department there. I loved those classes. I loved reading about Aristotle and Plato and Kierkegaard, obviously, and you know all these other guys. But I wasn't asking the same questions that the philosophers were. I wasn't interested, especially in like the European analytic, you know, continental philosophy. Wasn't interested in that style of thinking. I just kept coming back to like English, like to literature and to fiction and to stories and to poetry. I found those areas really fascinating. And so I was like, well, look, if I'm going to spend a lifetime of studying, I want it to be in the area that I'm interested in. It's part of why I haven't really like pursued seminary. I don't know if you feel this at all, but it's I think it would be really valuable. I think I get a lot out of it, but I don't think the way that theologians think. I don't think the way that pastors think, and I don't mean that in any sort of derogatory way. It's just more like totally a different sphere. I don't know. Have you had this experience with kind of like knowledge based things?
A little bit. I do think you and I are somewhat different in that. One skill I've learned I have is I can adjust the way I think depending on the subject pretty easily. So if you tell me this is a conversation about philosophy, then all these ways of thinking bubble up that don't necessarily happen in my day to day. Same when I'm at work, you know, I'm thinking in a very analytical way at work because it's computer science based. So there's a lot more detail there that I don't need when I'm reading a work of fiction or something.
But do you find that there's one area where you enjoy being in more, that you favor, kind of like a favored muscle set?
Potentially. I'm not sure I have a good answer for that right now, actually. I do think that there are definitely muscle sets I use less than others, or don't as easily turn on. But again, I think some of that is, you know, growing up being homeschooled, and the different types of classes I took, the number of interests I had to learn to flex a lot of different muscles, the mental muscles, that is. So that was really healthy for me. And I think it helped produce someone that, can pick up a book on any subject and at least get a basic grasp of it. I will say there are some subjects which just barely interest me at all. You know, things like economics, I'm a lot less interested in than I used to be. You know, I have some economic books sitting here on my shelf. You know, some of the, I have this one that I started working through, Adam Smith's,
Wealth of Nations.
Yeah. Wealth of Nations. And I started working through that a little bit, and it's interesting, but I think some of that stuff and philosophy, I'm starting to feel this way about some of the more theory oriented sciences, especially interest me less and less, partly because I'm at a stage in my life where I want to, like, give me something to do. Give me an action item out of this. Give me something I can take and apply to my everyday life. And the connection between some of the higher forms of economics or philosophy isn't there for me. You know, at one point I thought it was, or maybe it really was, especially late high school, early college. I was very interested in those things and I learned a lot about them. But then, you know, as I shifted towards, okay, well, I need to, you know, get a job, support a family. These things need to be able to apply to me right now today. So I look forward to learning about them further when I'm older. And when those things might be more, valuable for me. You know, I think about like Dr. Grant picking up a work on math when he was later on in his career and making connections that he hadn't made before. That's cool. I look forward to that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, here's a question. Do you, when you think about education or your reading, do you see it primarily as, sounds like it's very, you know, shocker, practical, very like, what can I get out of this today? But do you ever find yourself like a sense of escapism ever? Like, you know, I have a book that I'm like itching to get into back here on JP Morgan, who has nothing to do with my life. I don't intend to get anything like super practical
that
out
you're
of that,
aware of.
That Banjo. I'm aware of. That I'm
he
aware
has
of.
Plenty to do that's, with your life.
That's true. That's true. But I mostly am interested in it because it's so far removed from my experience.
Yes. I think I do that with fiction mostly.
That makes sense.
So, you know, I'll pick up Lord of the Rings, or I love a good sci-fi, you know, Ender's Game or Dune. Those are kind of the
I'm rereading
the
Ender's Game with my wife. And oh my gosh,
such a
I
great,
love this book so much.
Such a great story.
Go read it.
But
folks.
even those have characters that are written in such a way that you can go, oh, I could take that and use it in my own life. But yeah, if I'm picking up a biography or a work of popular science or something along those lines, it's very much I picked up the Roosevelt autobiography because I thought I want to be like this guy. What can I learn from him? And I could see at some point picking up books about people that I don't want to be as much like, if only to learn what to avoid. But I'm not at that stage in my life yet. So you mentioned escape. Do you find that when you're reading, it is more for escape than for learning, or is it like do you consciously set out one direction or the other?
I don't consciously. I think I usually. Now I'm looking at my books and I'm trying to think through it. I probably have like two or three different stacks of books. I have like one stack of book that is probably like, oh, I'm really curious. Like I got this book about Beethoven, where I'm like, I don't know enough about this guy. Like this is a really important historical figure, very influential to the world of music. I don't know enough about him. I want to know more. He seems like a really interesting figure. I know he changed music pretty radically. I'd like to know that. And I'd like to know just why, just how. And in some ways, that's escapist in just that it's totally unrelated to my life, apparently. But we'll find out how it is related, obviously. But more so in just that it's so different that I can fully immerse myself in it without having to say at some point, what does this have to do with me today? Which I find to be personally, I'm not saying that nobody should do this, but for me, it's kind of a stressful question. Cause I think for me, I always feel like I know what I have to do today. I just don't always know if I have the strength to do it. And so I think I'm normally looking through my books to find people who can help me have that motivation and who can not so much show me what to do, but show me like why to do it. But that speaks to more like my impetus and my interest and, you know, the existentialist in me is always kind of asking like, you know, why should I do this? Why or how can I keep going? I always feel like I know the right thing to do in some sense. I just don't always feel like I can do it when it's presented to me. But then I have other books that are like, I have to read this. I must read this, because I know it's a monument of literature. Like I have to read, I have to read Les Mis. I have War and Peace
right.
And I have to read it at some point. I have Moby Dick. I have to read that at some point. And I just try and like find a time when I don't feel like that's a burden and feel like it's a joy to be like, oh, sweet. I finally get to bite into Moby Dick.
Right.
Or I finally get to bite into War and Peace, you know, that kind of thing. And then I just have like smaller things that I'm always kind of nibbling on.
Yeah. I really like the point about getting to something and saying, I finally get to this. And that goes back to the whole pursuing what you love, especially when it comes to, you know, hobbies or kind of our personal pursuits. I don't really take stock with the pursue what you love for work, whole thing. But when it comes to something like what we're talking about here, trying to form a habit, I think it will stick better in the long term if we're doing it because we truly enjoy it rather than because we feel like we have to do something. And maybe that means there will be some books that sit on both of our shelves for years before we kind of build up the desire to get to them. And maybe that's just part of it. You know, right now the fiction I read is still very, known fiction. It's what everybody else is reading. But I could imagine at some point, I find an author or I find a type of fiction that I'm like, man, I really want to dig into this in a way I never have before. And the same could be said for any other genre.
I'm trying to rediscover that. I'm trying to remember what it was like to be like 10 and to walk into a library and be like, oh, I would like to read that.
Because I want to read everything. Yeah, right, right.
I don't feel like I have that anymore. I feel like I walk up to a book. And if I don't recognize the author, if I don't recognize maybe the publisher, I'm like, well, is it worth my time? Because that's how I measure everything now. And so it gets harder to do it. And I find myself kind of rereading the same, you know, maybe 50 books a year, partially because I love those books, but also because they're known quantities. And I would like to figure out how to kind of get back that, let me go explore this a little bit.
Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with at least some differentiation between this will be quality worth my time and this won't be, because if you did set out just to simply read every book simply because it is a book, there's a lot of stuff out there that's just not worth reading or could be better said by somebody else. So it is worth, parsing through that. On the other hand, and likewise, I think it's worth rereading stuff that you love as long as you're doing that, with you know, trying to open some fresh view into it every single time. You know, that's the thing I love about really wonderful literature is every time I read a book that I love, I learn something new.
It's a definition of a classic.
I notice something new. Right, exactly. And so there are plenty of books I've read, I'm like, well, interesting, never picking that up again. And then there's other things where I think that needs to go into that's staying on the shelf for a long time.
I have that experience. I mean, especially right now with like Cormac McCarthy books, where I just kind of find myself in the middle of a day being like, oh, you know what I really could use right now? Like I could use another dose of All the Pretty Horses. Like I could get back into that. And I find myself just kind of like, yeah, I need Blood Meridian again. You know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to go back. I'm getting back into, you know, See the Child. Yeah, let's go.
Right, right.
I really enjoy that. I do love doing that. And even like this, you know, I do this with movies too. I like rewatch the same movies over and over again. I just rewatched The Godfather for like the sixth time. But it's a classic. And just like we're talking about, like as I was watching it again for the sixth time, I find new things to be like, oh, like I never realized that the director was doing that. Or I didn't realize how poignant that moment was, or watching it in relationship to another movie and saying, oh, well, if I take that into consideration, well, then what does this mean? You know, and it's really interesting, like these great movies. And I think The Godfather is a great movie. I'm not really going out on a limb by saying that one. Like I can have conversations with other people about it. Like it's a movie where I can be like, so, you know, in this moment, like, what do you think Michael Corleone is thinking? You know, did Vito Corleone know about that? Like what's the significance of that? And then I can like think about these ideas of honor and loyalty and family and, you know, depravity and morality, like all these things I can think about in a way that's really invigorating, that kind of like keeps me going and keeps me excited. I think that is the, what we're really talking about is like finding valuable art, which is hard to do. Like that, I don't see new art. It makes me really sad. I'm going to try not to get on a huge tangent about that, because that might be esoteric and not really useful.
Well, I'm not sure that you're not seeing new art. I think it just hasn't had time to prove itself yet. And it's really hard to be, you know, in the sea of things that is being put out every day, to find the one thing that will be considered true art in even 10 years. Like, how many things make it past the first year in terms of your memory? And then how many things make it past the decade? How many things will make it to the next generation? It's a very small number, and it just only decreases with time. You know, there's so many pieces of literature that get referenced. Like, even like if you read Marcus Aurelius, he's referencing things that we don't have today because those things just didn't persist. That's not to say they weren't valuable in their time. It's just they can't be considered classics in the same way that other great works that were written at the time are. So I don't know how much of it is that the quality has decreased today. I'm not sure that it actually has. I think we're just more aware of how much there is.
I mean, it could be the case. It's a valid point. I mean, as a literature person, reading through the literature that I see in the world, I find it banal. Like, I just find, like, I don't find the sort of thing that, you know, and it's a high standard, obviously, but I don't find the things that Hemingway is writing. I don't find the things that Faulkner is writing. I don't even see a Cormac McCarthy anywhere on the horizon. And obviously, I'm a snobby person, so that's, you know, it's
sure,
that's part of it. But part of it is just everybody's the same. Like, we live in a culture, sorry, rant incoming, but we live in a culture that is so, like, it's one thing. There's no room for nuance. And I'm sorry, if you think you're a rebel, check your sneakers. You're buying the same thing everyone else is wearing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you think that you're one of one, and yet you're buying the same jersey that everybody else did. Like, we don't even have like a James Dean, you know, who's somebody who's a rebel without a cause. Like, everybody's just kind of like in the same miasmic soup, and they're just kind of like, yeah, I'm doing my own thing, but we're all doing it the same way. And,
right,
you know, that's where art dies, you know, and it's this thing where it's like nobody, but, you know, part of it is we're self-policing at a rate that is just absurd. You know, nobody can say Absolutely. Anything that's different. Everyone has their group and their tribe. And you can't say anything outside of that group because you'll get ostracized. And just the way that things work, like, you can't reach an audience if you don't march in step. And maybe that's the way it's always been. I shouldn't get too angry about it, but it feels like it's true in a way that's different from ever before. Like, this is me. This is my cynicism and my bitterness kind of coming to the forefront. But again, it's also, I think this education stuff that we're talking about, like, go out and read the classics, read the important things, is so important because you're going to read things that offend you. You're going to read things that you're like, this doesn't make sense to me. You're going to read things that, like, stick in your sleep. You know, like, I've had dreams about these characters and been like, I don't know what that meant. Right. And it's like,
oh, yeah.
Well, because it's unsettling, because it's dark, because it's meant to be there. I'm becoming more convinced of this, that art is there in so many ways to, like, you know, bring you back to the image of God, like, to wake you up to the image of God on other people. And this is me speaking as, like, a writer and someone who wants to be a creative. Like, that's what it's there for. And so that should shock you. It should awe you. It should unsettle you. And everything that we live with today is the opposite of that. Everything that we live with today tries to be vanilla, be boring, be middle of the road, appeal to the masses. Wow, I sound terrible. I sound like just an absolute, you know, a hermit. Anyway,
it's funny. I don't think you're necessarily wrong in your overall analysis.
But I don't need to bring this negativity to the pod. I don't need to bring everybody down.
I don't think you're saying anything that most folks aren't at least somewhat aware of. And it's worth pointing out, I think where you're off is, I'm not sure, I don't think it's anything new.
Yeah.
I think we might be more aware of it, partially because we're able to access more information about it than ever before. But the majority of people throughout history have kind of just been the same. They've been the masses. And you and I are just part of those masses. You know, there's, we fit into wonderful little categories that then get plugged into our social medias, and we all get fed the same content because, you know, you and I have a similar internet profile. So I don't think you're wrong about that. I think what maybe is what you could kind of do with that then is look at that and say, okay, well, if that's the case, you know, what, I don't think it's worth trying to, you know, set yourself apart. It's more about, okay, what is the right truth? What group of people is following the truth? And how do I pursue that? And then go and read those people, go and follow those people who are lighting the way. And I think the people that light the way, you know, we stand on the shoulders of giants for good reason. So go read those people. And the giants that will arise out of our generation probably won't be known until after we're all dead. You know, majority of the greats weren't known until they were dead anyway. So I don't think we need to look around and say, where is the next Hemingway? You know, where is the next Tolkien? Where is the next Marcus Aurelius? I don't know. I have some hunches, but it's going to be my great-grandchildren that find that out about our generation. In the meantime, we can keep building on those that came before us.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good point. And so much of it comes down to like faithfulness and patience and waiting. And you're right. Like, that's just the way that time rolls on. I've got a birthday coming up, so maybe that's where this is coming from. That's maybe where the existential dread is blossoming from. But no, I think it's a good point. And I think about cathedral builders. This has been an interesting image to me for a long time of, it would take centuries to build a cathedral, like 300 to 500 years to build a cathedral, like something like Notre Dame, Notre Dame, if we're being, you know, particular about it. And it's beautiful. It's stunning. But people are cutting stones that they will not get to see put on a cathedral. Like, they will not get [S2] Right. [S1] To see the edifice build. They don't even get to imagine. Like, they just have to imagine it. That's not a patience that we have. That's not a patience that I have. Like, I'll speak for myself. Like, I want it now. I want to see this thing built, and it feels like we should be able to because we have so much available to us. But maybe in the rush of progress, we've just lost patience. Maybe that's all we've traded for.
Maybe so. I think also it could be, you know, the people that built those cathedrals, they're so steeped in a vision of Christ that I think that we could recapture.
They were so maybe,
steeped in a vision.
But also have to take into account something like the pyramids.
Sure. Maybe it's just a vision of something greater than yourself.
Yeah.
I do think that if we're going to start comparing those visions, the longest project that we know has been the Christian project. It spans thousands of years through Old Testament times until now. And it's been ongoing. And it's not a project just of, you know, building cathedrals or building beautiful communities and building incredible Christian societies. It really is a story of building the church. And that's captured in the word more than it is anywhere else.
And ultimately, it's not something of human effort, you know.
Right, exactly.
The church, the chosen people, is not something that is active. Is not something that, I mean, it, you know, there's an activeness that we participate in, but in the sense of, you know, we do none of the choosing, we do none of the selecting,
right.
We do none of the, you know, not many of you were wise according to worldly standards. Not many were strong. Mm-hmm. Not many were powerful. Not many were of noble birth. But God chose what is foolish in the world to shame the wise. He chose what is weak in the world to shame the strong. He chose the things that are nothing, even the things that are not, to put to shame the things that are, which is, I First Corinthians, I think. I can't. I want to say
now
chapter
you're on
one.
Record. So if you're wrong.
So if I'm wrong, people can call me out on it. But I mean, but that's that's the truth. And it is a really good call. It is a really good call, like you're saying, to just to hit a pause on these conversations where it is tempting to just go full Ecclesiastes and say, like, what's the point of, you know, I think in Ecclesiastes he says of the accumulation of books and the collection of knowledge, there is no end.
Right.
Vanity of vanity. Everything is vanity. It's easy to go there, especially like you're saying in this internet age. I walk into Barnes and Nobles and get depressed because it's like, well, there's so many books here. How can I can't read any of them, or I can't read all of them. You know, I can't keep up, let alone produce something that makes it onto a shelf there. It feels like. So what's the point? But there is a point. And like you're saying, like it is. You know, God puts in front of us the work that he has for us today. I think that's the joy of having like this curiosity thing where it's like, well, you know, as long as it's not sinful, God gave us that kind of impulse. He gave us that desire to go seek out knowledge. You know, you're a fan of quoting, it's the glory of kings to seek things out.
Right.
That's the quote, right?
Well, the glory of God to conceal a thing and the glory of kings to seek him out. Yes.
Yeah. And so there's a real beauty and a real... Like, I think we should have real energy in our desire to learn things. And that's why I feel bad being kind of a downer on this pod. Like, I think this should be, not that everything needs to be like a rah, 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 rah call to arms, but, you know, I think there should be real, you know, real pep in our step.
Absolutely.
As members of the church being like, hey, I get to learn something today. I think that's exciting.
Exactly. And it's great, you know, or I guess the question out of that really is, okay, so where do we go from here? What do we do tomorrow? What do Banjo and JJ do tomorrow about this? And I had a wonderful conversation with someone I met last night just about thinking more than, well, it's the thinking both and, what do I do today? What do I do tomorrow? What is the thing that God has put in front of me right now? But then also thinking ahead to that next generation. You know, Luther has that great quote, if I knew Christ was returning tomorrow, I'd plant a tree. And that's just a beautiful vision. What I see in that is you have the thing you're supposed to do today and it should be building towards something tomorrow. And so when kind of bringing it back to this conversation at hand, when it comes to the literature we read or the things that we write, what are we doing with that? Is it purely for our own edification? Is it purely for us? Is it purely so that we can say, I've read all these books? That's somewhat rhetorical. I think the answer is no. I think the answer is it's so that we can pass it on to the next generation. And if Christ returns before then, great. We get to enter heaven just that much more sanctified. But in the meantime, while the Lord may tarry, here we are. Let's build something for our children and let's do it in a wonderful way. I want to be able to pass on and say, here's this wonderful library that I've curated for you, son. I'm going to hand it to you. Hand it off to you. I think you should read these books.
Yeah, I mean, maybe just to tweak it a little bit. I fully agree with what you're saying, but maybe to just tweak it a little bit. You know, maybe it's not just to say it's for our children of the next generation, but it's for those around. Like, it's our neighbor. Like,
absolutely,
knowledge for,
well, and then their children, and all. It's every generation to follow. Yes,
right. But I think at the heart of what you're saying is, it's not knowledge for self. It's not self-aggrandizement.
Right. Right.
You know, I have so many biographies on my shelf of people who committed suicide, you know, of people who were passionate, who were intellectual, who were like, I want to learn everything about that I can about the world, or I want to become the best at what I do. And many of whom, you know, at least got close, as close as they could come to that. But they were doing it, you know, at some level for themselves.
Exactly.
They weren't doing it for God. They weren't doing it for their neighbor. And I think they find the end of that. You know, they find, you know, kind of what Hemingway calls the nada, you know. And it's a sobering thought because – You have to be really, really careful, I think, when you step up to, you know, wrestle with this dragon a little bit, because it will it will bite you if you're not coming at it from a position of humility. If you're not coming at it from a position of, here I am, Lord, send me. You know, if you're not coming at it from a place where, whatever God says at first is true, and whatever man says second is, it's the next best thing. Again, yeah, I think we should go pursue it. I try not to come out of this like with a negative Ecclesiastes attitude, but just with like a positive, like go learn. But I think I'm also just confronted as we end this challenge with how hard it is, like with how difficult this challenge is. It's deceptively simple to set up that time to say, I'm going to take 10 minutes every day, 15 minutes every day to read and to write and to grow. But I think there's a real sneaky challenge there that I find challenging. I think we both found challenging this week.
That goes back to our very first interview with Kelly Nolden. He's someone who his entire life has been this pursuit of learning. And in that interview, just the expression of he's learned all these things, and he just sees the glories of God in that. And that's a wonderful thing. And now he's able to pass that legacy on to each and every single one of his students. And that's a wonderful thing. I think that's what we're getting at here. And so, you know, if I look at my life and I say, okay, so what do I take out of this challenge? Well, that means I should set aside that time tomorrow and the next day and the next. But I should do it not just with myself in mind.
Yeah, to your point, with the way that Mr. Nolden teaches, it always seems to me whenever he's teaching, you know, sometimes he'll lead teacher in services at work, and it always seems to me that he's always teaching us with a feeling and a fervor that is, I know that you need to hear this. I know that you need this information, because I know that I need this information. That's always his attitude. Is I always feel like regardless of whether we were there or not, he would kind of like, he'd be out there preaching to stones almost, just to like say, hey, this information about the glories of God, this information about Christ, his death, his resurrection, and what it means for you today and for your tomorrow, you need it. So I'm going to give it to you, kind of whether you like it or not. And it's really inspiring just how he does that in a way that is loving and caring and humble and wise. And I think it came through in the interview. I hope it did, because he's really, he's a treasure.
Yes, it was wonderful.
As were all our guests.
I think I know the answer to this question, but the question I like to ask at the end of every challenge, at the end of every period of time in which we try to establish a habit, do you plan to continue with this?
Well, this is a wholehearted yes. It's a wholehearted, I'm going to try. I don't know if I'll try and do 15 minutes every day. I don't know if it'll be so precise. I really do try, and I've tried to make it a habit just to like write every day, really for like an hour to, you know, 45 minutes to an hour. Partially that's just because of what I want to do with my life. That's kind of one of those goals, is just to make that a habit. And similarly, reading is something that I think just for what I want to do, I need to be doing lots of that every day. But at the same time, it's just kind of, I want to set up spaces for just for reminding myself that, like, you know, I think Dr. Grant made this point. I think it was a really good point. Like, you might be tired at the end of the day, but that doesn't mean you can't learn, and that it doesn't mean you shouldn't pick up a book that's difficult. And I think for me, what I'm going to pursue coming out of this is, how do I find books? How do I choose books for the day, for the week, that are a delight to pick up, that when I pick it up, I say, oh, I needed that. And I resist the urge to go, you know, flop down in front of the TV and just unplug my brain. I think that will be kind of what I'm pursuing as we head into the next challenge. How about you?
Absolutely. Wholehearted yes. I don't think there's any doubts there. I do think when it comes to, I actually really like the establishment of a 15 minutes or even 10 minutes every day, because I think those little, little moments every day accrue to something pretty large in the long run. You know, it's a lot better if you're going to work on a project to do a little bit at a time over the course of weeks than to try and hammer it all at the last minute. That's the way I look at this. And the same goes for things like my scripture reading. A little bit every day is better than, well, I'm about to die, I should read the whole Bible now before I die. You know, it's like you've done nothing if that's, or you've approached it wrong if that's your approach. So I definitely think that, for me, it will be more of an emphasis on, yeah, those last minutes at the end of my day before I go to bed, just get 10 minutes in. If I can even read a few pages, that's something. That's better than nothing. And that would be, you know, my encouragement to any young man listening to this would be, set aside that time. 10 minutes is really not that hard to find. Put down your smartphone, put down social media. You can find 10 minutes. And I will say, you know, it's for all of our talk about, oh, it's better to read these types of books, or, you know, these things are less interesting. Start the habit with just reading anything. If whatever you find interesting, I don't care if that's the easiest fiction on the planet.
Comic books are great. Just saying that.
Comic books. Just get into the habit of picking something up and learning new ideas. That would be my encouragement.
Yeah. And I'd just say plant trees, build cathedrals. I think that's a good motto to take into life.
Very good. This has been the final episode of our challenge to read or write something for at least 15 minutes every day. Stay tuned for the next challenge. We'll be coming at you pretty soon with that. And until then, go find a good book to read.
This has been the Forging Honor podcast. Music and production is by Elliot George. For more information about what we do or to learn how to get involved, visit our website at forginghonor.com. There you'll find information about our community, The Forge, and how to join other young men seeking to glorify God in thought, word, and deed. You'll also find blog articles, book recommendations, and more ways to grow as a Christian man.
If you enjoyed the show, please tell a friend or family member about Forging Honor. We would also appreciate it if you would take a moment to like and subscribe. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, a rating and review only takes a moment, and it goes a long way towards growing the Forging Honor community.
Thanks for taking the time with us today. We hope you'll take up the work alongside us and join us in the task of Forging Honor. We'll see you next time.